This is Their Life Story Podcast with Robin Levine. I have always believed that everybody has something to teach all of us. In this series of interviews, I will talk to all types of people in order to learn from and be inspired by them and their life stories. Before we get into this episode of Their Life Story, I'd like to talk to you about one of the new podcasts that I've been listening to a lot lately. It's called Opening the Playbook, and it's a podcast about women in sport. Each week, sports reporter Christina Haydanis sits down with female athletes like Olympians, snowboarders, surfers, rugby players, and bobsledders, and executives and reporters to share stories about overcoming the odds, what it's like to be successful in a male-dominated world, and chasing your dreams. Opening the Playbook is available on all podcast platforms. Christina is a great interviewer, and she asks tons of great questions that I wish I asked people. My guest this week is Elena Jean. Elena is a filmmaker, content creator, writer, public speaker, and environmental activist. Elena and her co-producer, Gloria Pancrazzi, are in the process of finishing up a documentary called Coextinction. Coextinction is a film about the declining population of southern resident killer whales in the Pacific Northwest. In their film, they travel around the Pacific Northwest talking to fish and whale experts, indigenous peoples, activists, and political stakeholders. The theme of the film is that all life is interconnected. My first question is, where are you? Are you from Ontario? Somewhere in Ontario?
Yeah, originally from Ontario, yeah. I grew up in a small town called Uxbridge. It's like a farm town. Yeah. How about you? Where are you from?
I'm from Smithers.
Smithers. Okay.
Have you ever been to northwestern BC on the mainland?
Yes, but not to Smithers. Like, how far north are we talking?
It's another 5 hours northwest of Prince George. Like, it's pretty north.
Not that far north. No, I haven't been.
It's on the way to, like, you could go to Alaska that way.
Damn, that's cool. That's, like, wild, like, northern BC. I've never been up there, but would love to go. Like, wow, what an amazing place we have here. Canada is an amazing country, but that's definitely a very cool spot.
Yeah, I'm so proud of where I'm from. I always brag about it when I can.
Yeah, that is cool. It's definitely cooler than my small town, Ontario town. You know, I think a lot of Ontarians are migrating to BC. Actually, I feel like a lot of us are born there and then we discover BC and we're like, what the heck? This place is great. But we have so many inbound people also as well, like emigrating, and they also often go to Ontario. So it's like this great like swap, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, my best friend moved here from Orillia, Ontario, and he unfortunately moved back, but there's lots of cool people from here, from Ontario, that are here.
Totally. So are you in Smithers now?
No. Oh, no. I live in Euclid.
Oh, you live in Yuki?
Yeah. I've been in Yuki for like a long time.
Oh my gosh. Why haven't we met in person yet?
Yeah, no, it's weird. I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen you in real life anywhere. But I'm just down the road.
Sweet. All right. Well, yeah, we should meet in person at some point. Grab a coffee or beer, whatever. You and Lily and I, we could all go. But I mean, I'll see you inevitably on the ground. I feel like these towns are so small. So
yeah, that's funny that you didn't realize I was in Yuki. But yeah, I'm just here.
Oh, awesome.
I would have totally done this in person, but I just don't have like mics and stuff.
Oh. I've got a mic, but I guess you'd need two. But those blue.
I have one. I just don't know. I'm really scared to do the first one, like, because I don't want to wreck it with the sound. You know, nervous to actually do it in person.
Yeah. I feel like in person though is like that's when it, you know, it's cool, like meeting people on the ground, like in their environment, or like I guess you could have. I guess it's a bit tricky with COVID right now, but. Damn it.
Yeah,
But the online recording softwares are pretty good now. So
it's so good. I don't even use a mic and it sounds pretty good. Yeah. So you're from Ontario. And then what did you do like growing up? What did you think you wanted to be when you were growing up?
That's a great question. I think just as a right away, if I can jump into a tangent, I mean, I think when you're little, like it's so what you love to do and what you want to be then is so indicative of maybe the direction that you should consider actually pursuing as like your life purpose. I think there's a lot of clues in like who we are meant to be in our childhood. But yeah, for me, it was like, I read a lot of National Geographic growing up, and my dad works at the Toronto Zoo, and he's like a very passionate, well-spoken individual. And he would come home from work and he would talk about his experiences with wildlife. So I was very in touch with wildlife and nature and just like how incredible this world was when I was younger. And so I wanted to be, I went through a whole range of things, but they were all kind of exploratory, you know, like the classic, like I wanted to be an astronaut at one point, you know, author, journalist, photojournalist, explorer, all these things, conservationist, vet, like stuff like that. But I feel very lucky to, I mean, this is probably your next question, but definitely pursuing some childhood dreams now. And it definitely is a good fit. So, yeah.
You're doing a lot of those.
Yeah. Definitely consider myself really lucky. Yeah. I picked up I think a lot of filmmakers actually have the same story of like, they had the little camcorder when they were little and they like pretended to direct stuff, or they like made little videos with their friends. I would force my sisters to be like my actresses in these like videos that I'd make. And I'd had this like news show. I called it the 21 Maple Street News Show, 'cause it was like, that was my house, like on my street. Yeah. And it was just a super wacky comedic, like parody news show. That I do. And we have these big suit jackets. Like we take my dad's suit jackets and stuff. And like, we'd just be there and be like, welcome to the 29 Maple Street News Show. Yeah. So I was supposed to be a filmmaker, I think. So yeah, it was kind of some clues in my childhood there, but yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you went to like, looked at your LinkedIn, you went to, engineering, where you took engineering at Queen's?
Yeah, I did. I was always pretty academically inclined. I love to learn. That is like one of my number one values in life, is just like probably curiosity and desire for knowledge and exploration. So I did well in school and I was pursuing sciences because they are just so fascinating to me. And I just kind of wanted to see how far I could push it. And, you know, engineering wasn't what I actually thought it was in the end. You know, the reality is it's a lot of like backbreaking mathematical brain work that I'm actually not that great at. I'm very creative and more, what is that, right or left brain? I don't know, but.
Maybe left brain.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a struggle, that degree, but I'm glad that I did it because it was kind of an exploratory phase for me to see if it was a fit, and then in the end it wasn't, but yeah.
So what did you think you were going to do with your engineering degree when you went into it?
Initially, so when I applied, I wanted to go into aerospace stuff.
You wanted to be an astronaut?
I wanted to, yeah, or be like, you know, exploring space, like building things and exploring space, like building robots and stuff. I just thought it was so cool, cutting edge, you know, like innovative and still exploratory. But yeah, it was more an interest in like the actual innovation and like the story of it, and like as opposed to actually sitting down and doing the, like, you know, the work. But yeah, so I wanted to be an astronaut. Didn't get into that program. And then I got into Queen's University, which is well known for its engineering program. And I had some friends who went to it. So it's a general at first. Like you're with everyone. You don't pick your discipline and then you specialize. And I kind of flipped around, but ended up in geological engineering because that's just, it's a lot of earth sciences. And that's what fascinated me at the time. So yeah. I don't know did I answer your question? What was the question?
Yeah, you did. What you wanted to do with it at first?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I was trying to figure it out along the way. It was conservation, environmental work for a bit of it. I just wanted to be a part of like kind of cutting edge research and innovation and creating things and exploring ideas. That's what I wanted to do with it. And then at the end of my degree, it kind of flipped to actually applying that in an entrepreneurial sense. So I pursued kind of business and entrepreneurship for a little bit, like very much on the business side of things. And then eventually migrated out of that as well. But Engineering's cool because it's like a very multi-purposeful degree. You know, you don't have to be the, you know, cut like just engineer in the traditional sense. Or, you know, you're working in an office and you're building bridges or mines or whatever. And you're doing the paperwork and signing off on projects. You know, it's so the whole process thinking and the project design is so applicable across so many different disciplines. You know, even in the filmmaking world, like it's been really valuable, and especially in business as well. Yeah.
Did your degree help you get your first jobs out of like school?
No, absolutely not. No, I always, yeah, all my friends would go off and do like work at engineering firms in the summer and stuff. And, I never did because they didn't connect with me, that kind of work. So I was working in all my spare time while I was studying engineering, I was working on like marketing and creative projects for the most part, or conservation oriented stuff. So, you know, it's funny because like I should have listened to that more back then. That was like the key indicator, you know, for me that I was maybe pursuing the wrong degree. But for me, I like that multidisciplinary. I always like hung like clutched to that as like an idea. Is like, well, I'm like, so I have this very broad skill set, so this is great, which is holds true to some degree. But yeah, no, I never did engineering courses. And then out of school, I was already building this like clothing company, this eco-friendly clothing company. And so I kept working on that and was picking up freelancing creative digital projects and stuff, which eventually evolved into filmmaking.
Was that called One Something, the clothing?
Yeah, the clothing company was One Species.
One Species.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I still really resonate with the whole premise of the idea, and I am gonna actually relaunch it as something not a clothing company, but it was kind of I kind of came to the end of the runway with that and just like realizing that it was a bit bad. I was building, basically the premise was I was building collections of clothing around specific endangered species, and then 10% of the profits would go to conservation organizations working on the ground with those specific species. So the first species that we built a clothing collection around was the southern resident killer whale. Then we had Antillean manatees. Then we had Joffre's spider monkeys. And those were the three. And then we had some other species lined up. And it was really cool because like, for me, I loved the like wildlife side of things. And then it was this merging with business, because at the time it was at the height of the Facebook marketing boom. And so it was, you know, consumers were so accessible. People who would be interested in buying this niche product, you know, so wildlife themed clothing, you could target them so easily online. And I think people are so hyper aware. That's been a big discussion, I think, the past like year or two, is this like, you know, how we're so almost like vulnerable as consumers online, because we have all of, you know, our information is just, you know, accessible to these marketers and companies. And so that was kind of the business, like, the business intelligence behind that brand that actually made it viable as a real business. And I really came close to pursuing it, like having I was almost on Dragon's Den, but had dragons and wanting to invest in the company, like, no, you know, way. Well over 100K kind of thing. And it was very much a business, like a venture. But it became this clash of values for me, where I realized like, it's so backwards to be, you know, promoting this environmental message and to be, you know, trying to save wildlife when I would be selling, you know, massive amounts of product to people around the world. And it's so hard to make sustainable clothing, especially in an economically viable way. It's so expensive to make like sustainable clothing. It's pretty much near impossible. So in the end, I didn't continue working on it, but that was One Species. But the whole idea is beautiful. You know, the idea was to make wildlife conservation mainstream. And that's something that I still really stand by. It was just a bit of a pivot in the wrong direction. So I've kind of like pulled it back now to hopefully turn it into a bit of like a show and a media platform in the future.
Cool. I have so many questions for you. You worked with Sea Legacy when Sea Legacy started too?
Mm-hmm.
I just found that out today.
Yeah, Sea Legacy. Well, Sea Legacy is like right across the island from us, actually, in Qualicum Beach, right? So I started working on, basically the progression was one species, which led me to work on Co-Extinction, which is the film that I'm working on now. That's kind of coming now almost to the finish line. It's 3 years later, so that's wild. But and we met Christina Mittermeier well, just after we had started this film, and we were looking for mentors, partners, all kinds of things. So she agreed to meet with us, and she, we were chatting with her about like potentially partnering or working on this film together about orcas, endangered orcas on the West Coast. I was in Toronto at this time, and she was like, "Well, I have this organization, Sea Legacy, and we need young people to come and work for us, and so you guys should consider applying." And so we never worked on Co-Extinction together, but it was a good kind of like job, a side gig almost. Not, it wasn't a side gig, it was a full-time gig, but at the time I wasn't making money off the film, so even still it's questionable. But yeah, so I moved across. That's what dragged me to the West Coast, and then I stayed here. But yeah, Sea Legacy, they were still new, so maybe a year or two, max 2 years old. The organization was still really young, and there was a lot of growth. And yeah, I worked with them for 4 months, and then pursued the film full time after that.
That must have been amazing to meet Paul Nicklin and Christina Mettenmeyer and be able to work with them. That's like the craziest opportunity.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, this space is small. I'm sure maybe you're discovering for yourself too as you move into the podcasting space, and especially within your niche. It's like, conservation and film, conservation media, science, natural history, and film, like these are relatively small networks, industries. And so now, three, let's say 4 or 5 years into this, like being in this space, like I've met so many of my heroes, so many amazing people, like had, great convos with Paul Watson and Sylvia Earle, like, the legends, and just like really truly met some of these people that I've always like read, articles by or looked at, so that it was really cool working for them. But at the end of the day, they're just, people. So it was cool. It was the coolest thing was to be behind the scenes and just see them as human beings, like with their own strengths and weaknesses. And it was cool to see how they were functioning and building this new organization, but also getting a behind the scenes look at how Nat Geo functions. Especially because that brand is just so strong and so legendary. And again, every organization, just like every person, strengths and weaknesses. And it makes it so much more normalized that, for me, it was like, ah, like, well, I can do this, all this stuff. You know what I mean? It just makes it more real and attainable. And so that was really, really beautiful out of that. And yeah. Yeah, it was definitely very cool. Very cool. And they've had, at the time, they had a lot of people kind of, the company was still new and the culture and the structure and everything. So a lot of people coming and going in a working sense as well too. So, but now they're a bit more like, I'm pretty sure tight-knit hiring. I think they've got their team pretty locked in now. I would hope so. But yeah, not sure. It's hard with new organizations, but yeah.
Is that where you met some of the wicked people that are on your team now? Like not just Gloria, but like this, it seems like your like cast is pretty stacked.
Our team is a, oh, my team for Co-Extinction is amazing. And I consider myself so lucky, so grateful to be working with this incredible group of people. And no, none of them, I didn't meet any of them at Sea Legacy. They, Sea Legacy, I made some good friends out of, but no, Co-Extinction, Gloria, I didn't know Gloria, but I met her. She was kind of like a mutual friend in a way at the beginning, but I met her on the West Coast when I was first learning about the Southern Residents for one species. We were covering a story, right? So I was at the time like a budding content creator, like making really terrible video YouTube videos about different wildlife and stuff. And yes, I was filming, and I met her out there. She was working with the partner organization, and she just like liked what I was doing. And then her dream was to make a film about the orcas, and so she pitched me on it, like in Toronto. later that year, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing with my life. So I was like, sure, let's make a documentary film and let's see how big we can make it. Let's see how, like, you know, like, we were just so naive, both her and I had no experience in the film industry. Like, luckily I had a creative kind of digital skill set. She had a journalism background, but like, we were naive as heck, but that's all good. That's a good thing, I think, in the long run. But yeah, and then Andrew Luba is kind of a mutual friend. He came on to help out with the Kickstarter that we launched at first and stayed on with us. And he's just been an amazing asset to the team and a wonderful human. And then Nicholas Castell, he's been a cinematographer. He's co-editing with me right now and has edited throughout. And he's, I went to school with him. And then there's been other people who've joined on that are just took an interest. Wanted to volunteer their time and have kind of now stuck it out with us. And, you know, that passion is like really core to that, the like a true, honest, genuine passion. Like, all of us at times have worked completely for free for extended periods of time. Some of us have worked the entire time completely for free for extended periods of time. So this is a project that matters to us way beyond it being a cool experience or like a money maker or anything, right? So the team is, yeah, the team's wonderful. We have some great mentors and stuff as well too. Yeah.
When you and Gloria first like came up with the idea, how did you like know it was even possible? Like, how did you think you were going to be able to afford to live while you started making it, or be able to afford equipment, or like be able to get the contacts, or afford the trips you needed to go on, or anything?
Again, naivety. I think I'm so lucky, so lucky, and I think Gloria is too, in that we have been both individually brought up in these environments that are so encouraging. You know, like, I'm so thankful to my parents, because my parents, like, you know, my mom's a teacher, my dad worked at the zoo. They've never had experience in entrepreneurship or anything like that. The worlds are so, you know, in the business world and the everything, like, film is so foreign to them, but they've been so supportive throughout all of my wacky endeavors and pivots and career choices and, you know, going through engineering and then not pursuing it, being a lot of money and, like, you know, that degree essentially on the surface being worthless. It's not really the case, but yeah, so supportive parents, Gloria as well. And you know, I also have been a part of really amazing entrepreneurial communities and just opened my mind to the fact that I really truly believe, especially when you come from such a privileged position, when you're born in North America, like, holy heck, we're so privileged. Like, whatever you set your mind to, you can do. It doesn't mean you're gonna get it right the first time or second time or third time. Like, we decided to host a concert. We were like, okay, so we're gonna make this film. We want it to be big. Like, we don't know what we're doing, but we didn't worry about the filming part. We were like, first, we need to raise money. So how do you raise money? We were like, oh, we'll have a concert. So we had this huge concert. We spent like 2 months planning this thing downtown Toronto. We got the most insane sponsors. Like, we had, I can't even tell you how much booze. It was like disgusting how much booze we had. It was just stacked high in the corner. It was all free, like all these different booths, the most beautiful venue. Everything was like perfect. We had these sick bands like come in. And, you know, we had like hundreds of people saying they were attending on the Facebook event. And then in reality, we had like 20 or 30 people show up. And
Yeah,
then
right.
we ended
Oh.
up in a real deficit. Like, it was like something silly, like $1,000 or $500 deficit at the end of the event. And
But
I,
you needed to raise thousands of dollars.
oh yeah, we were like, we want to raise 20,000. Like, that was the goal. And, you know, for a film, you need like at least 20,000 to do it. Like, of, but you know, for the, we, you know, originally we wanted to create a 10-part series. It's now become a full feature, but like, the type of, you know, film that we're working towards creating is like, it's a very expensive project, right? It's not. So yeah, we needed a good chunk of money that we didn't have. And yeah, but looking back on that, you know, kind of that abysmal, is that the word? Abysmal failure.
Abysmal. Yeah, I don't think it's a dismal. It's abysmal.
No, it's not abysmal. I said it, I was like, that's not right. Abysmal failure of a concert, it It didn't even really faze us, which is cool. I don't even know why. None of my team was like, oh, boo-hoo, like, I'm out. We were just like, okay, what next? A Kickstarter. And then that was a pretty big success. So, yeah, it's kind of just got to go for it. And things work themselves out. Takes longer than you anticipate. You know, we're 3 years deep into this. We had about a year where we just went way in the wrong direction, spent money on things we shouldn't have, didn't know what we were doing, like creating a 10-part series. We like created the first episode of the 10-part series and we were like, this is terrible. We threw it out. We're like, we're starting again, like, you know, from so. And who knows, maybe even we'll finish this film and it won't even be, you know, everything that we expected or whatnot. And even if that happens, like, you know, you gotta be like, okay, well, that's reality, you know. It's like, you gotta, I read this really great, sorry, I'm kind of going off here, but I read this great quote by Maya Angelou the other day. So beautiful. And it was basically like, in life is, you can't expect life to go the way that you always anticipate it to go. You're gonna have your expectations like let down. So just, that's reality. But we are so gifted in being these incredibly creative individuals, humans. It's like one of our greatest assets is just our creative intelligence. And so be innovative, be creative, be resourceful, like, and figure out another way or just like roll with it, go with the flow. Like that's the messiness is part of the joy of life. So lean into it. Yeah. And I thought that was a really beautiful quote from yesterday.
Yeah. It's amazing that you guys went from like not really like having experience in this kind of thing to like doing like a legit big documentary with like great people in it. Like that guy from Sea Shepherd, that's the best guy you could have had in it. And that other guy, what's the Godfather of Wales, that guy?
Ken Balcom. He's a legend.
Yeah. He seems like the coolest guy ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And really that, I mean, Gloria, yeah, she was such a boss when we were organizing the production plan. She did all the logistics and called all these people and just like made it happen. She's such a go-getter. And so, you know, such an amazing partner to work with. And I was doing a lot of the like marketing style building stuff and like kind of like creative envisioning like stuff. And she just like crushed out the, like, she is a go-getter. When she wants something, she gets it done. And even if she's never done it before, it's so cool. Awesome. So yeah.
She seems really like driven and serious. Like you could tell, like there was like, I saw a video of her today, like leading this march. And she like, I was like, whoa, you don't want to mess with her.
Yeah, that march for the dams. Like that's a huge protest. We spent months planning it. She put in the majority of the work along with Morgan, who is a French influencer, so passionate about this as well. So Morgan, myself, and Gloria kind of drove this project, but especially Gloria and Morgan, like they hit the ground. It was, I was not able to join for the first week and then COVID hit and it got canceled. And so super unfortunate, but we're going to carry it on the ground. But yeah, really, really inspiring. I mean, but that's what kind of what you need. Like, no one really knows what they're doing with anything. So, you know, just go and figure it out along the way. I mean, that's the only way you're going to actually get stuff done. So, yeah.
I was reading about that Snake River Dam and it's in Artificial too, the Patagonia film.
Yeah.
And it's like, how is it like knocked down yet?
I know. Actually though, it's ridiculous.
It's pretty shocking.
It is. It's truly deeply shocking. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. That's cool though. So you saw that was in Artificial or what?
Yeah, it was in Artificial. I'm pretty sure it was in Artificial. And then, and then I was like, yeah, take the dams down. And then I tried to write to some people, like some governors today, but the links didn't work.
Yes. That's awesome. You did that. Yes.
I tried my like the links like kept not going anywhere but anyways I was kind of getting sidetracked. I do you have any good stories about like you and Gloria like traveling together and like becoming friends and meeting all these great people and like getting heavily like emotionally involved in the cause, like just like really caring about the whales?
Oh yeah, oh man, that's yeah, that's been a crazy thing, like such a roller coaster. Is like Gloria is so deeply passionate about the southern resident killer whales, and that's kind of why she's been, it comes from this very pure, beautiful place. Like she growing up, the orcas were her kind of obsession, and so that's played into now her adulthood and her career and stuff, which is amazing to see. And for me, it's very much extinction and kind of like the bigger picture, like the whole wildlife, extinction of wildlife in general, that really moves me. And so we kind of realized that at the beginning when we started working together. We were like, she brought in the whole fascination with orcas and how special this particular species of orca is. And then I kind of brought in this like bigger picture and how, how are they connected to the salmon and the environment. And it's become this film that's like such a convergence of those two elements. So orcas are like the main characters and like the storytellers. They're an indicator species, right? So they're trying to tell us what's actually happening with the greater ecosystem. And we see that everywhere around the world with different species. We have all of these indicators that are, what are they trying to show us? What's actually happening, right? So but then like, working with her and the team, it's like the hardest part of any organization or doing anything, is working with other people, but it's also the best part because everyone is just like a mirror and they reflect, the things, they reflect so much to you that you need to work on and improve upon. And they also can fill in your strength. They fill in your weaknesses and you fill in their weaknesses with your strengths. And so Gloria and I both have really complementary strengths and weaknesses and skill sets. And, she's so compassionate, and I can be a lot more like logical and like kind of like pushy in a way. And so she's been, we really, sometimes she'll be like, well, maybe you shouldn't phrase it like that. And I'm like, you're right. That sounds horrible. But, so she's taught me so much. And I think she's learned a lot from working with me, and the same can be said for the entire team. I've learned so much from all of these individuals. And I mean, the going out and filming when you're actually on the ground and so immersed in it and speaking to all these different people that have spent their lives involved in some capacity to one facet of this greater story, it is so moving. Like we would, we'd have days we were just like crying, like days we were like angry. There was a lot of days too where we were just exhausted. Like not only because we were just like, we've done some really crazy productions because we didn't really know what we were doing. So we worked ourselves so hard. We would like shoot in frickin' like Kelowna, and then the next day be in like Port Angeles, and then the next day be down by the Snake River Dams, like, or like Portland. Like we were ripping around driving and everything, and kind of it was intense. Early mornings, late nights, like we were exhausted, but all of the information and the emotional weight of everything like kind of coming into our minds is being a lot. And on top of that, now like beyond the actual production, post-production has been such a challenge because this story is so complex and we want to do it justice. We it's so important for us to do it justice and to speak the truth as best we can. But it's, there's people who've been studying these topics for their entire lives and they don't even know the answers. So, it's been hard trying to come from this outside perspective, but really, tell something that's beautiful and true, and but still, it's going to leave the audience with like a, some real opinions and things to go forward with. So that's been a challenge. And on an individual level, I've kind of had times like even this summer, just so tired of like kind of how big the scale of this project and everything. We've been editing for a while now, and I kind of like lost touch with like the core why of why I was doing it, and just kind of burnt out. And I had to experience how terrible it was to be not driven and just being like, not really having much meaning in my life, to then realize like what a gift it is to be able to have something to fight for that you truly, there's this, it's crazy that we live in this time that like the world is just disappearing before our eyes. Like the planet is, I don't know if you've seen David Attenborough's like new Our Planet film, like such a good example of like, we live in this insane time when biodiversity and extinction are just like, we're in the midst of the great mass extinction, the sixth one. And like, there's nothing more precious than life, right? Of course, there's nothing more precious than life. And that includes our own lives. So to be involved in something that is trying to help protect that is just, yeah, it's really amazing. So a bit of a rant, but it has been a roller coaster, like a total roller coaster, but in the best way. So
when you get like burnt out and you're working super hard like that, do you ever feel like shitty to be around because you're like stressed out and you're not sleeping enough and you're worried that everything's going to go well and you're like, oh God, now I just snapped at my buddy that's helping me make this project come true?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It is I mean, we all have our different ways of expressing frustration and, you know, I tend to get like quiet and go away. Other people like snap and, at the end of the day, communication is key. And another reason why I love the team that I work with is we're extremely good at communicating. And we've had people on the team in the past that weren't great communicators and it ended up just not working because, you know, eventually you have a broken, you have a disconnect and, that can go south pretty quick. So, you know, Gloria and I have had like little arguments before and all of us kind of have on the team and there's some contrasting personalities, but I think everyone is just really good at recognizing like when their ego is at play and like compromise and just talking about, you know, there's been times I've been like, wow, I've been not doing showing up 100%, like I feel so bad and like, or I feel burnout, like I need to take a few days just to go away. And you know, Gloria especially is just like, yeah, like totally compassionate and supporting and everything, and that is at the core of what has allowed us to continue.
When you get in a rut like that, you do you find like getting outside is one of the best things you can do?
Totally. I mean, you got to be able to resonate with me on this. Like Tofino is being another amazing, you know, wonderful gift that I've discovered in my life. Like just being in a town that's so connected to nature and is so, the whole culture here is about the environment and, you know, the ocean and surfing or just like being outside. It's like the West Coast. So that transformed my life on an individual level being out here. And it's why I live here and why I will always live in a small town that has some sort of like key outdoor sport that it kind of revolves around from here on out, which is so different from what I grew up with. And I'm so glad that I kind of found it and saw what it's like, what it could be, you know, how valuable it could be for yourself and for community. Yeah.
Do you sometimes feel like, because everyone's on the same page that here, that like, you know, like there's so many good people in the world and you forget about what's going on elsewhere and like what people are like in so much of the world?
Yeah, we definitely live in a little bubble here. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. And I think travel too is like, really important to a degree. I mean, it's like you got to balance it because we know now how detrimental travel can be. So don't be like a super consumer when you're traveling or, you know, but yeah, getting out is important for all of us to varying degrees. But I had a time last summer when I was like super comfortable here in Tofino to the point that like I had this amazing, amazing gig, like this crazy contract that I did. Cause I've kind of picked up things as I've been working on co-extinction along the way, but I was going to be traveling all around Africa and I was so stressed about going and I shouldn't have been cause it was this amazing opportunity and experience and everything. And I was really, you know, logically stoked about it. But, and then as soon as I went and was gone for a little while, I was like, oh yeah, you know, the world, there's a whole other world out here and we need to, what is that saying? It's like, you have to be like a for your community but have like a global mindset or whatever it is.
Think globally but act locally.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Act local, think global. I think that's a good saying.
I'm curious because like you were like all of a sudden you were in Africa and like I think I was following you on Instagram at that point and I was like, doing whale in Africa. What were you up to there?
I was filming some content for an organization called Milky Wire, which is a startup. They're building an app that basically, it's essentially like a Patreon, but for conservationists. So if you're a conservationist working with wildlife, right now that's their focus. It will expand to other philanthropic endeavors in the future. But basically you have like a little channel and you post about stuff that you're doing, and then people can donate a monthly amount and follow you on the channel for content. And so they've been building that now for a couple years, and they reached out to me on Instagram to work with them as like an impactor. That's the people that are on the platform. And I was going to be representing Co-Extinction. And so we started working together with that. And I was kind of on the platform as a conservationist representing my team. And then now Gloria's on it as well. But they liked me like personally and wanted to work with me more. So they offered me this contract, which was an amazing opportunity. I literally traveled throughout Africa by myself with like a camera and like what I could carry on my back, hopped to all these different countries and filmed, you know, one night I'd be like tracking lions through the bush, like all night. The next day I'd be like hanging out with a bunch of rhinos. Like the day after that, we were like tracking wild dogs all day. And like, it was just an incredible, incredible, experience for me, blew my mind. yeah. But, anyway, so I filmed a bunch of content for them, and they've kind of been using that for their platform. Originally we were going to do like a show or something together, but they've just got so much on their plate right now. I don't even know if that's going to pan out. They're still startup mode, trying to figure out what they're doing. So yeah, that was that.
Do you have any like cool experiences from Africa that were extra special?
Too many, too many. I mean, yeah, let me think here. So up close and personal with so much wildlife. Like Africa is one of the last places, if not the last definitive place on earth where this megafauna exists. And, you know, there's crazy interspecies relationships, and including humans, where there's a lot of like human animal conflict, human carnivore conflict a lot. I mean, most of the wildlife has now been confined to these big reserves, especially in South Africa, like, and some other countries is just fenced and it's like all these reserves. So not much like true wild, but these spaces are massive. And yeah, so just being like up close and personal with this megafauna, and I'd be sleeping in, you know, a canvas tent, and throughout the night, you know, I kid you not, like hyenas right outside my tent, hippos, elephants, like you'd hear lions, like just grunting or like outside the tent, crazy wildlife. And it was so dangerous. Like nowhere in the world is it really like this. It was so dangerous that like, if I needed to go to the bathroom, like at night, I should probably try to just hold it or like be like really like open it, take a look around, shine my light, make sure there was no leopards hanging around, and then walk to the bathroom. And it's literally like 20 meters away. Right. So it was, that was really cool. But wild dog tracking and the lion tracking was particularly really cool. Like just seeing these conservationists at work where, you know, we'd be in, Land Rover and we'd be like ripping around the reserve all day, and we'd stop and like look at the tracks, look for scat, we'd like try to hear if there were any sightings anywhere, and like trying to track wild dogs that are like wild, like they don't have collars, right? So we don't know where they are. And we tracked these wild dogs for 2 days and we were about to give up, and then we stumbled on them. And they have there's a vet there. We needed to collar the alpha male, basically. There was a vet, and so he darted the dog, and that's a whole process. And then you get the dog and you put the collar on it, and just being like, you know, 20 meters away, not even from these wild dogs, or in the case of lions, it was like, they would be right beside you. Like, and we were tracking them all night. Like we didn't sleep. So you'd be like eating cookies, like just little cookies, and driving at like 2 a.m. so tired. I'm like shining the light, like trying to find these lions. We're like driving through the most crazy brush. Like I was like, is this real life? Like, how is this a real job? You know, people just follow lions around and then they keep data points on what they're up to and stuff like that, and try to collar them, like often taking collars off, putting collars on. So crazy field work, like crazy field work. Yeah.
What an amazing experience.
Yeah, it was definitely up there. I mean, hopefully not like, I don't know, this world is just an amazing, that's my ultimate calling, is just like being in these ridiculous scenarios and filming it. Like for me, like I love learning and being on the ground so much. So it was definitely a dream come true little gig that I did. Yeah.
Did you ever see anything like that scared you, like snakes or anything?
Actually, I actually love snakes. I've had reptiles, like always had pet reptiles growing up. My poor parents have to take care of the snake that I have back home right now. But my dad like showed me a picture the other day. He's like, I got a new terrarium for Avon. It's like this huge like tank. He's treating her well, so it's good.
Oh yeah, because he's a zookeeper.
Yeah. So I mean, no, when it comes to wildlife, I'm pretty fearless. I don't think I had any, I mean, just, yeah, like just, there was one time I was in Mozambique and we had to track these find these lions and relocate them because there was man killers in the group.
Yeah.
Lions don't kill people unless they learn that they can kill people. And then when they learn, they teach the rest of the pride. So it's really unfortunate, but you have to kill them. So we had to go and capture and euthanize a few lions and relocate the rest of the pride. And I remember we were there and yeah, the one of the lions, we got on site, the filmmakers, like it was myself and a couple of other people who were filming for their organizations, and we were there with all the vets and government representatives, and there was just a bunch of scouts and stuff that were like kind of taking care with these huge guns. It was just like, yeah. And one of the lions, the man eaters, had gotten away. So we're all just on site with the rest of the pride, like just knocked out, like sleep, and they're doing the veterinary work on them. And lions are absolutely savage creatures, which I did not realize, but they can be they pretty much eat and sleep. And so when they're you don't want to be in the middle of a upset, you want to bump into an upset or angry lion, you definitely don't.
Oh my god,
they're not the most powerful or aggressive big cats out there, but they certainly are up there.
Yeah. Even a kitten scares me sometimes.
Kittens, like domestic cat kittens. Yeah. Their nails are so sharp.
They're rowdy.
Yeah, they can be puppies too, like the sharp teeth. They get you in the back of their arm or something, you're like, that's not fun. Yeah.
So were you with like this team the whole time you were in Africa? Like the same team cruising around all these different countries?
No, I was by myself, actually. And I just kind of, I would go like country to country or location to location, and I'd meet the people, the conservationists on the ground. So it was different organizations.
But you had it set up to meet them. You didn't just fluke into meeting them?
Yeah, kind of, again, like it was the organization that sent me, like, this was the first time they'd done anything like this. And so they had like a list of like the names and the general date range. And then I kind of, as I went, I like contacted them in advance and like set up a time to meet that I could be on site with them and everything. And sometimes it'd be a few days, sometimes it'd be an afternoon, and then I'd head to my next spot. So yeah, it was kind of when it make it up as I go, but some organization in there for sure.
Yeah, that's such a cool experience. I want to talk about your film and whales, because I actually really love whales.
Yay.
And I went on your guys's website today and I was like almost crying for like an hour or two, just like reading like all the like plight of the whales.
No.
And like there was just, I wasn't actually crying, but for so long I was very sad. Oh. So I want to hear about like the people that you talked to that made you not sad. Were there people like that?
Were there people that we talked to that made us not sad, like characters and people that we've interviewed and whatnot?
Like gave you hope and like we're like, no, we could turn this around and this is how.
Yeah, I mean, everyone that we spoke to did, because at the end of the day, like especially we spoke with some absolute heroes, you know, like Jim Waddell, for example, he runs DamSense, but he's been fighting. He used to be an Army Corps of engineer, and he's been fighting these Snake River dams for like decades. Alexander Morton, same thing, but with the fish farms, like, just, you know, she's so immersed in this and been fighting it for decades. And these people have come up against walls the whole way through that are just unbelievably frustrating. And we've had the smallest taste of that in, you know, doing our own campaign work and whatnot. And it's really hard on the psyche. It's very frustrating. And though at the end of the day, though, like, you can't, there's literally like no point if you don't have hope. I think that is like, if you're gonna continue living, like, you have to have meaning and hope and something to work towards. And so they wouldn't be doing what they're doing if they didn't have hope. So there's definitely a lot of frustration, but that drive, that meaning, that purpose is so core and so key to so many of the people that we spoke to. And even, you know, I've felt it kind of like blossom and grow and develop in a more definitive way within myself. I think my whole team has, and that's been a wonderful aspect of working on this, is like, wow, like, life is just like so much better when you have something to like work towards and believe in, and really truly to your core, like, it be within your deep value system. Like, you believe in this thing, you know it to be true, and it's a vision, right, for the future and for what's possible and for what's beautiful. And that is just you know, ubiquitous across all of the different issues that we looked at. The world is full of problems, and we are incredible problem solvers. And so it's just a constant process of fixing what we've broken or what is broken. And there's so much beauty to be had in that. And there's so much possibility too. Like, I think one of the big things that we kind of saw in the making of this film and the campaign work that we've done is just the power of the individual and the individual voice. And I know that that sounds kind of like superficial, like, this is something that's being said a lot, but really truly I think it hasn't clicked in with people, or maybe it's just starting to, just how, you know, powerful your voice can be. And, you know, calling your government, calling, you know, talking to people, the decision makers, about what it is that you want, or talking to your peers, your friends, like, that has a rippling effect. Like, your values, your belief systems, like, the goodness and the things that you do to try to make the world better, really, like, it creates a ripple-like effect in ways that you can't even predict. I mean, I think about my dad, and like, he really deeply inspired me, and I think he doesn't even realize like to what capacity, you know, he did, just with his like stories that he told me when he was coming home from work. He was just stoked. And like, that, you know, shaped so much of who I am today. And so the same could be said for any conversation that you have with anyone, if it's the right time, right place, like, right moment, you know. Yeah,
that sounds like a really empowering thing just in and of itself, like, yeah. Just knowing that we all can make actually a really big difference. Like, it seems like you didn't really realize how fully you could going in, hey?
No, we didn't. I mean, I don't think we really knew what we were doing, like, right at the beginning. Like, it's weird. I just think back of it, I'm like, it was all just a blur. Like, what the heck were we, what were we thinking? Like, but it does come from that, like, yeah, like, we had a dream. And, yeah, it's important to follow those dreams. Like, so, sounds so cheesy, but you just, like, you have to, otherwise you're gonna like live in regret, or you're like, you're not fulfilling your, I truly believe you're not fulfilling your, like, your purpose on this planet. And we have to believe that we have purpose, otherwise what's the point, right? So yeah. Getting a little philosophical.
No, but I like that.
Yeah.
So when you have like a video and you do all these like years of work, and you've done all the like filming, and you've talked to all these people, and you kind of like have a storyboard, and you know what it's going to look like. Like, so now what do? You just edit it and finish editing, and then how do you put a movie out?
Great questions. We're figuring that out right now. We've been editing now. We've been editing and filming for about 2 years. So like we'll still go out and do pickups. Like we'll go and something we realize we're missing something in the storyline or something happens. Like last fall there was like a starving grizzly bear that was discovered up in the Broughton Arc. Some photos kind of came out. They went viral around the world, and we realized that not just killer whales that are being affected by the declines in salmon populations, but so much, right? So many other animals and species, and grizzly bears, like this big mammal that we have, big carnivore, like literally starving to death. We're seeing starving grizzly bears, and they're swimming across from the mainland now to the island because they're looking for food, and that has never been noted in the history of, even indigenous knowledge here on the island. Like grizzly bears are not seen here, and now they're coming in the hundreds. Like it's crazy. So we went up like last minute to shoot that, and because that's an important story. The editing process for a film like this has been extremely challenging because there is so many different mini stories within the greater story. It's no one really has the answers. So we've had to dive deep into each of the subjects and the issues that we cover in the film and figure out how to string it all together in a beautiful way. And that's one big puzzle. All documentary films, all films, I guess stories are puzzles, right? Like essays are. That's a simplistic way to think about it. It's like you have your ideas and your themes, and they come through and like have to piece together, and then you end up like with your final paragraph and your final thesis statement and all that stuff. But it's the same thing, but in a bigger way, I guess. And it's also poetic. So you have like you're drawing connections between things that haven't been connected before, or drawing connections for the audience, right? So figuring that out has been really challenging, but we have our whole storyboard basically. Is like we create out our whole story, our plot and everything, and then as we start to piece it together, inevitably it kind of changes, evolves. We fill in gaps, we switch things around, and something comes up and we realize it's important, so we slot it in there, and it starts to evolve and come together. And now it's really starting to come together. So we're going to be finishing up the film in the next couple months, and then distribution is a whole other beast. There's these different phases to filmmaking, and that has been a really fun discovery for me. Is like, I love that about filmmaking, and these different phases, and after we finish post-production, it's that whole distribution phase. So we don't really know, to be honest. There's a lot of things up in the air for that, mainly because COVID, has really changed the whole way that people are seeing films now, right? So you can't have a big premiere on the ground, and that is really, really, really tough for a first-time filmmaker, and for a film that we want to be seen by a lot of people and hopefully picked up by a distributor that like where they have a big audience, right? So we're trying to get it in front of as many eyeballs as possible, and if that means literally releasing it on YouTube for free, and then doing some crazy promotional work, like we will do that. But ideally, we're gonna have it picked up or sold, or partner with a distributor, a digital distributor. It's not gonna be, it's gonna be, very accessible digitally. And then we'll have screenings across North America and maybe even the world as well. We're definitely gonna do an American tour. We're gonna see how things go, but small screenings and stuff on the ground at festivals, and so all of that is coming down the pipeline for next year.
That's so cool. It's so inspiring to me because I've always wanted to make documentary films, but I was always scared of it. It seems like I don't even know where to start. I always it's always so intimidating. I don't have any of those skills. I don't want to go to film school.
Well, from us, like we definitely didn't know, right? So I think a lot of really great films have also come out from people just, that's the great thing about doc film is it's like as much as the aesthetics matter and everything, it's more so about the story and like how it's pieced together. And when it's like authentic and real, like even if it's not top-notch like cinematography, as long as there's been amazing stories that have been put together. Yeah, that's the cool thing about doc film. But I guess that four-part process is kind of the fundamental idea behind it. You have your pre-production where you're doing fundraising, then you have your production where you're out doing shooting, then you have post-production where you're editing, and then you have distribution. And those are like the four phases if you're to break it down super simply. And you kind of there's so many different ways to do each one too. Like we did a lot of community building at the outset, which is kind of unusual, but we did it because it just played to our strengths and interests right away, and that allowed us to have a successful Kickstarter campaign. So the film has been there's a good chunk of it that's been crowdfunded and supported by a great community. So that was ended up being a real strength for us. But now we're not as engaged with that community right now. We're not running campaigns and stuff. But when we do launch the film, we're gonna re kind of touch base with that community, be like, yo, okay, it's ready. Here we go. We're launching the film. Now we want to do screenings. Now we want to do actions, impact stuff like on the ground. So that kind of unconventional approach, because of our naivety, ended up being a strength in the end. So there's no real way, no like rule book per se, right?
It must be so cool to know that you're getting your message out soon.
Oh my gosh, yes. So nerve-wracking as well, too. But really exciting. I mean, we're so embedded in this story, in this film, and like it is a really beautiful, beautiful story too, just like the interconnectedness of life, especially in our own backyard here. And so I really hope it's gonna resonate. But when you work on something for so long, it's like you really hope that you're doing it justice. And we don't know what we're doing, like I've mentioned before, so hopefully it will just be it'll be everything that like we hope it can do. Hopefully it'll inspire people to take action.
What's the biggest thing you've learned? Have you learned anything like from the whales themselves?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. I bet you Gloria would be able to blow this question out of the water because she just thinks about and the whales and dreams about them all the time, and they come to her in her dreams and they tell her things. So
I didn't really know anything about her until today. I was like, Gloria seems awesome.
yeah. Gloria's rad, yeah. She's a little firecracker. Yeah, the orcas. So for me personally, I mean, they so many different things I could say for this. I mean, I kind of have been from the very outset fascinated by this idea of them being an indicator species. They're this apex predator that's existed on the coast and close to the shoreline as well. So they kind of have this human interaction component that is unique to them. They've been tracked for, they're the most studied marine mammals on the planet. And they're obviously, of course, hyper intelligent beings and so fascinating. And so the just them being this like iconic character species for the coast and what they represent, and now how they're helping us tell this story, like this idea that is, whether you want to take it from a scientific, they're an indicator species, or a spiritual sense, like the fact that the idea that they're trying to tell us something is so fascinating and compelling and interesting to me. So I really love that. And I think it's a good way to look at the natural world in general. It's like listening, like not only should you have intuition within yourself and listening to your own body and self and others around you, like listen to the environment around you and other beings. Like we're surrounded by so many other beings, those like other spirits. And and so to I guess I'm kind of like tangenting into this other aspect that they've taught me, which is like I kind of came into this film, and I have always been like, I studied engineering, I've been in science, like I'm big science head, not very never really was very spiritual or like, and I think almost in a way because of that, so I almost have lacked a bit of in particularly in the past, almost like a bit of empathy and compassion, because I just see things as like I used to especially see things as just like logic and numbers. It was like, well, nature is important because like it's all connected and everything has its place and a role and everything. But it's more than that, and that is really what I have learned from being so focused on a species and different species also on the coast. And this story is just like, these animals like are they are they have their own souls, and just like us, like, you know, it's different. They have a different way of perceiving the world and a different way of being in it, but they are like living, breathing beings. And that is a very, very beautiful and special thing. And I don't know, I'm still kind of like grappling with that idea, but it's made me feel a lot more whole, honestly, as like a person, and how I carry myself in the world, and like how I interact with others, and especially how I connect with nature. It's given me a lot more like purpose and joy and love for life, I think. So that's been really cool to explore that more. And Gloria really gets that too. So that's, you know, she's helped show that to me too.
Do you think after this film you'll want to pick another species and do a film about and like another animal?
Yeah, that's actually an idea that we've had right from the outset, is we would love to pick another species and do the same thing, like, you know, another co-extinction story, because everything is interconnected. It's not just species going extinct in isolation, and this is a big wake-up call for a lot of us, and what we're realizing now is so how can we, you know, we could pick a orangutan, say, for example, and look at how they're connected to, you know, their environment and the massive destruction of their habitat and rainforests, and but it's so much more than that, right? So diving deep and letting that species tell the story of their environment, and as well as the people connected to that species tell the story. So yeah, would love to do that. I got crazy amounts of ideas for films that I want to do in the future. I really found my calling with documentary filmmaking, so it's going to be probably most definitely a lifelong endeavor. We'll see. I'm not going to say that for sure, but yeah, can't wait for the next ones.
I'm so jealous and excited for you.
Yeah, well, you should do it. You should do it. Make a film.
I've always thought about it, but I always thought it was like too big of a dream, and I was like, I'll never be able to pull that off.
There's no dream is too big. Yeah, well, I don't know. I was just gonna say, but really though, like I think I kind of realize as I've like started to be a little bit more ambitious with my dream pursuing, that like if you don't pursue those like driving, those nagging things, like you just end up 90 and regretting that you didn't. So, and there's literally no harm in pursuing it. It's like you don't really have anything to lose unless you make something to lose. It's like you can take it as slow or as fast as you want, like just like explore it. Like for example, free diving is something is a, definitely a bit of a dream that I have, but I've had so much trouble equalizing, like equalizing my ears at depth. I scuba dive a little bit, but free diving is like has been a barrier. Plus, like there's a lot of fear barriers there, and right now I'm kind of taking a course, and honestly, it scares the shit out of me. But just the fact that I'm like taking a course, like I'm like I feel like happy about, because I know what I will regret, like not having tried this, you know what I mean? So I can just at least say then that I've like given it a go and explored it, and I can draw the line wherever I want to, right? So yeah.
Good for you. Free diving seems so rad. I've always wanted to free dive too.
Ukulele has so much good free diving too.
It's outstanding. Like every time I go on a walk on the Wild Pacific Trail, I'm like, that'd be so cool to get in the water.
Yeah, there's so many people that free dive in Yuki too. You could probably just like go out with them one day, be like, yo, can I come?
Yeah, I think I know it was a bunch of them. Okay, so here's my big whale question. So there's all the ship tanker traffic. There's dams, there's fish farms, even the fish hatchery fish. So what's like, there's overfishing. What's like the biggest problem, or is it not really like that because they're all just a huge problem together?
This is the question. And you know, this is like, this is what we went to figure out. We're like, why are the southern resident killer whales going extinct? And the reality is, as you've touched on, it's a huge multifaceted issue. It's no singular one. We can't say, and we can't say for sure, but there's almost no point in saying for sure, because I think, you know, we all play an amazing part in that, like, you know, maybe you're a fisherman. Well, then you have a role as a fisherman to play. Maybe you are just like the average Joe, but there's this like river that runs through your community, and like you can play a role in helping making sure that that river stays like clean, and it's good salmon habitat, right? Like if you're a whale watcher, like you play a role in educating, but also ensuring that like you're not you know, disrupting whale behavior and you're being respectful and everything. It's like, if you're, you know, whatever, you can play any kind of role. So I think, like, to say that there's like one thing that we really, really need to focus on is maybe not a, it's not really what we want to do. We want to showcase a lot of other ideas, but there are some major kind of, first off, mindset shifts that we need to make, and then like major actions that we can undertake as well, that should be focused on. So, I mean, from a mindset perspective, as individuals and consumers, again, we need to all realize that we play a role and we have an impact. And so, we need to change our mindset around that and thinking and realizing that this is co-extinction. We are interconnected. We need to be conscientious about not putting the economy and economic decisions over environmental decisions, being smart about that. So, that's kind of the mindset shift aspect. And then in terms of like actually actions that we can take, like the general, you know, blanket statement is like, contact your decision makers, like push for change, especially in the political arena, because you can only do so much as an individual in playing the role that you play. You know, the other aspect is that big, you know, what is the policy? How does policy inform and shape? And so call and write and like join protests, whatever that looks like, right? Can look different everywhere. And we have placed a lot of emphasis in that regard on not breaching the four Lower Snake River dams. So that's been a big focus for us. I mean, the dams kill, I believe it's an estimated 6 to 8 million salmon every year. It's like a, how many salmon they're killing. So we have, and there's absolutely no point for them to be up to. It's a whole, I could go deep into that, but yeah, so the March for the Dams was the big protest that we organized for that. And we've encouraged people to call, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers and Governor Inslee kind of from the outset, and Bonneville Power Association, you know, contacting these organizations that have the power to take the dams down. And that's kind of, I guess, our example, but you can apply that to fish farms. You know, you can apply that to fishing regulations, right? Like there's so many things you can apply it to. So, yeah.
So when people watch the movie and they're all like, and like however many, like hundreds of thousands or millions of people finally see this, are they like, what do you want them to do when they watch it? Do you want them to go, we're going to stop this and stop this? And they're all writing letters, making phone calls and not buying farm fish?
Totally. So, I mean, at the end, you'll have to wait and see. But at the end of the film, most definitely, it's going to be pretty directional. We'll be like, this is what you can do. Go here, do this, like, yeah, and we show it too. So like we show exactly what you need to do. So there's going to be that, but that, yeah, certainly, like you hit the nail on the head. It's like, we're going to be doing some big calls to actions around, about calling and writing and putting pressure on decision makers around certain things, as well as our individual consumer decisions. So yeah.
How have your like consumer decisions changed in the last few years since you've started doing this project?
Great question. I mean, I think I've always been pretty conscientious because growing up, I just like have been, but have really, I think this is a lifelong journey too, but like getting closer to your values and understanding your values and developing them and just being better at like keeping your word and stuff like that, like being true to what you say, not just talking the talk but walking the walk. And I mean the big example for me is when I was building that clothing company, right? There was a big shift, there was a big pivotal moment kind of where I was like, wait a second, this is going in the wrong direction and I'm not actually staying true to my values here, and I need to do this differently. And someone asked me the other day, they were like, why does it like really matter that you, why don't you just like make a bunch of money in a business and then invest and then like, you know, have a donate a bunch of that money. You know what I mean? So like some project, like, isn't that almost a better thing? You have more money. It's like, well, no, it's not, because like that impact that you have as you're like going against your values to make all of that money. And I'm not saying making money means you're always going against values, right? There's ways to do it. You have to be creative. Like you have to, and I think that oftentimes like our values direct us in a way that like is maybe it's always the better choice, right? So like you're gonna come, it's gonna be a better pathway in the end, but like you're impacting the people around you and everything beyond actually just the extractive elements of whatever, however you're making that money. It's like, you know, you're showing people that that is, what are you telling people like around you? And I think your, again, your voice and like how you act in life is like one of the biggest ways that you show up in the world, but that has the potential for impact, both positive or negative, both on yourself and the rest of people too. So yeah, for me, it's kind of, I've just gotten closer and closer to understanding that. And it's never black and white. Like we live in this gray space world where we can't be perfect. So it's like, you know, but having boundaries, drawing the line, like doing the best that you can to show up, and also not beating yourself up if like you just like don't have an alternative choice, or like it's not possible for you in that moment. So, I mean, yeah, but I think just the biggest shift for me, to summarize, it really has been a bit of a mind shift thing in like how much I almost like value my values in a way. It's like how much I like really connect with them and think that they're important to live by. So yeah, it's been cool coming from that like business side of things, like kind of this like, and then switching over now to be this like conservationist. I think a lot of my old friends are maybe like, oh, she's become like hippy dippy, but yeah, I'm really grateful for kind of like figuring that out and being where I am now. So yeah. Hopefully that answered your question.
It really did. Do you think that a big part of what's wrong with the world and a big cause for climate change is people not having those values and not doing the research where their stuff comes from or what they're like, the effect of their decisions, and thinking that they actually matter because things like the status quo is just the way it is and that's just the time we live in and I'm just going with the flow?
I think it totally depends on who you're talking about. So if we're to make a big generalization, like you could split society into two groups. You have the privileged and the unprivileged, and like the privileged people, definitely there's a lot more onus on you, right? You have so much free time. You have full access to, you have so much power, money, access to all the knowledge in the world. Like, and you've probably seen a lot of media, you know? So like you definitely have the capacity to like make the right decisions, right? And then there's a lot of people who are just trying to get by, and in that case you know, you can't really expect them to know even like what the best thing to do is. They're maybe just trying to survive, or they haven't been educated, and I think in that case it really comes down to policy and the leaders, like how they're setting up the systems and in our municipalities and beyond, right? Like, so as those people, especially up at the top, if you're listening, I think, you know, especially need to be connected to a good value system, right? That benefits environment and people.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to reach those people. Are there grants for like people doing what you're doing?
Totally. There's like countless out there. Our film has been partially funded by grants. It's been partially funded by crowdfunding. It's been partially funded by private donors. So I think that, you know, you shouldn't just rely on grants. It's really nice to have, you get more flexibility if you have the other two, if you diversify. But yeah, there's amazing grants out there. We got a $50,000 Story Hive TELUS grant like back in the day, but like, I don't know, it was like 2 years ago. Yeah, that's a big grant. But with grants, like oftentimes you get, you know, there's deliverables or there's like constraints. Not always. Like we got a 10K grant that was just like, yeah, like go do whatever you want. So yeah, I mean, lots of opportunities out there if you're willing to look for them.
That's so good. That means you can tell important stories like this. Thanks so much, Elena, for being on.
Wow.
I'm so stoked that you took the time. I mean, I'm sure you got tons of editing ahead of you.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to dive back into. But yeah, thank you so much. It was really awesome. I'm really stoked for all the conversations you've been having with everyone, they seem really great. So I'm definitely,
thanks.
It was awesome. It was great chatting. Yeah, thanks so much. And we should chat again sometime.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, let me know if you want to go surfing or hang out.
Oh, yes, always.
Sweet. Okay, sweet. Sounds good.
Okay, see you later, Robin.
Yeah, see you later. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed that episode with Elena Jean. Elena inspired me to interview my next guest, Captain Paul Watson, the founder of Sea Shepherd. Thank you so much for listening to Their Life Story. If you really liked it, please feel free to share or write a review. You can also follow us